Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With determination, courage, and insistence, our guests are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to how these inspirational stories may be closely related to your own. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest is a recipient of a certificate of recognition by the California State Legislature for her commitment, hard work, and inspiration to the community, and was issued on January 19, 2018. Our guest has spent nearly half of her entire life in every state female prison in California. She also has accumulated more parole violations than regular Sunday newspaper delivery for a year, and there's more. Her rap sheet tallies over 20 pages. Yes, unfortunately, with a hardened drug addiction, she was living on the streets of despair, but wait, a remarkable and incredible turnaround. Her childhood years did unearth a deeply rooted constructive trait of putting her whole heart into schoolwork. This played a big part in her persistent, unwavering climb towards her current status, despite living in 12 separate foster homes. Please listen to this heartfelt, triumphant story. Welcome to today's show, Marjorie Strain.
Glad to be here.
Good day. Welcome to the show. Marjorie, I know we said a lot about you in the opening, and I'm wondering, I'd like to have you start by giving us a kind of overview of your life as it is today.
So today I live a very rewarding, fulfilling life. I'm very active as far as putting forth effort towards bettering myself and being a support to others to the best of my ability. And, you know, it's happy. I live happily.
Well, that's certainly a good way to open us up here. Tell us about, how would you give us really a more clear definition of your life today?
So, how I spend my days?
Well, whatever, right?
Well, you know,
you're a happy person.
I'm happy. Everything that I do is towards an end of just being a better person, and in all the aspects of my life, from my personal life to my education to my participation in the community as a whole.
So tell us, how is it that you are working towards being a better person today?
So as for being a better person, I attend a lot of groups. I attend Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous on a regular basis. I have a sponsor. I've worked the 12 steps, and those principles I put into action in my life on a daily basis, a moment by moment.
Now you say you have a sponsor. What exactly does that mean?
Well, a sponsor is somebody that you pick to take you through the 12 steps, and they also provide support, advice, suggestions. Whenever I'm struggling, I call up Barbara, and and let her know what the situation is and ask her for her input. Mm-hmm. She gives me good feedback on whatever it is that I might need help with.
Do you confer with her daily or weekly or...
Probably minimum a couple times a week.
Uh-huh. So she's very important in your life.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. An active support.
Uh-huh. And is she just an acquaintance that you have, or is she a trained professional?
Well, she is a trained professional as far as drug and alcohol counseling for her own personal as her career. Mm-hmm. But she's retired now. Barbara came into my life approximately 20, 25 years ago when I had my son, and I lost him to CFS for a brief period, and she worked as a drug and alcohol counselor at a program called Trinity House, which is basically a perinatal program for women who are either pregnant or just recently delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And she was my counselor back then, and of course, obviously, I wasn't ready to receive that help that she was giving me because I spent another 25 years doing the things that weren't healthy for me or my child.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to run, when I got into recovery, I just happened to run into her at an AA meeting, and I
asked
her.
So you bonded, bonded since.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all need a mentor in our lives one way or another, right, for different reasons.
Absolutely. She provides that mentorship, but, so when you don't have a whole lot of family,
mm-hmm.
the other people in your life become like family members.
Well, become family,
yeah.
Right? So, it's hard to imagine being incarcerated for years and years and years.
Right.
It's just very difficult to understand that. Could you explain to us, if there's such a thing as a medium way to explain being incarcerated for all those years?
So basically, it's a guided day-to-day living. You are told when to wake up. You're told when to eat. You're told when you have free time. You're told when to work. Mm-hmm. Et cetera, et cetera. And that becomes routine, and that's how they keep, rehabilitate someone,
mm-hmm.
is to give them a more normal day-to-day life rather than a life that we often live while we're out on the street.
Mm-hmm. When you were incarcerated, did you have a compelling notion of wanting to get out of there as quickly as you could?
Well, there is no rushing a parole date. I mean, it is what it is. And, of course, anybody that's inside wants out.
Right.
That goes without saying.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rushing it. Obviously.
So you were pretty much still.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Would you say it's a level of peace with
yeah.
him? Really?
Yeah.
You didn't fight the system.
Humans have a great ability to adapt. When you don't have any choice in a matter of living,
mm-hmm.
you do whatever it is, and you adapt. You physically
mm-hmm.
adapt. You mentally adapt.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is.
You know, I was a chaplain at local county jail and also state prisons. And I would say that in my work with inmates, that they always were bucking the system. Well, not always, but many were always bucking the system, stating why there was errors made in their situation. And I didn't pick up a lot of sense of any peace, like I picked up with you. I mean, your very realistic approach to this thing is you're there, so what are you going to do, right?
Well, you've done it as long as me. Hey, you have to come to some sort of somewhere where there's a balance. So for the majority, bucking the system is where we're at. That's why we can't do life on life's terms out in the normal world where regular people are often able to do so. So when we're incarcerated, if we haven't gotten to a point of, let's say, wisdom and growth within ourselves to accept responsibility for our actions and the consequences that go along with them. Once we get to that point and we're able to do that, then we quit fucking the system and trying to fight and looking for all the negative. Then we're looking for our sunrises in the day rather than the sunsets.
So how many times were you actually incarcerated?
Well, I've done five prison terms, and I stopped counting at 50 parole violations.
That's a good place to stop.
Right.
And what did you think about in your idle moments that you had for yourself?
Well, probably in the beginning when I was younger, it was probably exactly as you stated, bucking the system and trying to just being very complaining and in denial about my part and why I was there. And then, you know, being negative, getting in trouble while I was incarcerated. And after I grew older and got that little bit of wisdom that I shared about, my thoughts became consumed with what I could do while at that very place to better myself at that very moment with what I had.
Right. You say you never knew your father. Did you ever know anything about him?
No, only that he was African American and that he was significantly older than my mother when I was born.
And you also say that you really never had a mother in a general sense of a nurturing mother that guided your life. So tell us about the relationship with your mother.
So my mom was I knew my mom from birth. I was a ward of the court my whole childhood from birth on. I was removed from her care.
And how, at birth, you were removed?
At birth, I was born polysubstance exposed in utero, so I was born addicted to multiple substances.
So your mother was on drugs herself?
Oh, yeah. So I was removed from her care, but the courts gave her 1 weekend a month that she could come pick me up and take me, and I could stay with her for that weekend. Some weekends she would show, most she wouldn't. But so I've known her my whole entire life, but as a mother, no, more like friends. She grew up as I grew up. Well, she grew up while I was growing up because she was 14 when she delivered me and turned 15 a month later.
Oh my goodness! You're like so brother sister age or sister sister age,
right?
Yeah. And your mother has since passed away, correct?
Yeah, she committed suicide in December of 2014.
Fairly recently. You know, we're going to have to take our first break, and so. This is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5, a listener-supported radio. And, of course, I'm Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Marjorie Strain. And we're going to be right back. Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca, and I am interviewing Marjorie Strain. So we were talking about your mother and that you were taken away from her at birth and put into a foster care. You lived in 12 different foster homes. your entire life. That's a lot of people.
Right. And one group home.
Tell us about the general experiences that you had in the foster care and the homes that you were living in.
So basically, I wasn't really noticed. I would either be vying for attention in competition with either the natural children of the foster parents or the other foster kids. To be seen, I had to do things extraordinary over and above what the other kids did, which usually happened with school and school grades. You know, I put my whole heart into bringing home them A report cards and them gold stars, and that would get me the attention I so craved.
Did 12 homes is a lot of homes. Do you maintain contact with any of these homes that you lived in?
So I do still maintain contact with one lady that was my foster mom out in Cottonwood. Her name's Joanne Hackney.
Mm-hmm.
And I still call her mom, and, you know, she also raised my son for 16 of his 18 years.
Oh, so she's very, very close to the family then, very close to you.
Oh, yeah. She's been more of a mother to me than my own mother. Oh,
wow, wonderful. That's really saying something. It's wonderful that people from society just step up and contribute so much.
Right.
Right, just to one person. Tell us about these different families. I mean, was everything living, was it... were there difficulties, challenges in various homes? What lacked? What stood out?
Well, a child pretty much develops by the time they're age 6, the thoughts and feelings that they feel about themselves, and when you're moved from home to home, you don't grasp an identity. You're pretty much lost. So I didn't have very good self-esteem and self-confidence. I didn't feel loved. I felt very unwanted.
And in all the situations?
In all the situations.
Really?
I was never the only child.
Mm-hmm.
So I was never given, you know, the specific love from mommy and daddy that a lot of children receive.
Right.
And, you know, there was some abuse, you know, physically as well as sexually.
By the foster parents.
Yes.
Was this common, or was this just an isolated incident or two?
Very isolated. It was one home.
Uh-huh.
But it was enough to significantly damage the emotions of a 7-year-old.
You were 7 years old.
Yeah.
My goodness sakes. Well, that must have had a lasting impression scar on you.
It did. I pretty much have blacked out a lot of my childhood memories. You know, I can't tell you a favorite teacher's name. I can't tell you my best friend's name, or, you know, when you're moved around so much and, you know, you never just get settled in.
So what memories do you bring forth to your life now of being in this environment of foster homes? What memories do you have of being raised and a child?
I can remember the, pardon me.
Sure.
I can remember the days of waiting on Saturday all afternoon, morning and afternoon, waiting for my mom to show up when she didn't show up. I can remember getting a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good event for me.
Well, a good event for any
right, right. I can remember learning to swim by being shoved into a pool that was too deep for me and being forced to learn to swim that way.
Mm-hmm.
My childhood memories are pretty conflicting. They're kind of, not the greatest.
Have you ever thought of writing an autobiography?
I've had quite a few people ask me that as far as that they believe that my story is pretty
profound.
Compelling, yeah.
No question, profound.
And that it might be of avail somebody something good mm-hmm. if I were to tell my story, and I don't know.
Well,
I don't know if I have that kind of confidence yet.
Oh, I think you're doing pretty good. Remarkable odds, and to receive the achievements that you have are they speak for themselves.
Right.
There's no question about it. So, did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes. My mom, when I was 10, I'm the oldest, so she had two boys and a girl after me that she raised. I have a brother whose name's Jay-Zach, a sister whose name is Levinas.
And that's a nice name.
Yeah.
I like that.
Different.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest brother, his name is Heland.
Mm-hmm. And do you see them?
I see them now, and I have healthy relationships with them all.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's very positive.
Right. I was never raised with them, mm-hmm. so we don't really have the typical sibling,
mm-hmm.
you know, older sister mm-hmm. type relationship, but we are good friends.
Well, that's the best that you can make out of it, I would think.
Right.
Right. So they clearly understand all that you have gone through.
Oh, certainly.
Which probably binds them a little bit more closely to you.
It does now. However, while I was going through my addiction struggles, and you know, that makes people, even family members, not want to be there and be treated badly by somebody who's involved in substance abuse.
Right.
So, but now, for all the hard work that I've put into recovering from that, from active addiction, it's made our bond tighter now, and they want their big sister.
Well, I would think so. Do they live in the local area?
No, they live in Pollock Pines, which is about 50 miles east of Sacramento in the El Camino area.
Mm-hmm. So, I think before we get into the addiction of drugs, I think we're going to take our break right now. And, listener, we're going to be right back on this very inspiring story. And if you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Marjorie Strain. So we're going to be right back. Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Henry Cuenca on the Radio Cuenca, Henry Cuenca Radio Show. And I wanted to remind our listeners that there is a March for Science, and we invite you all to support science on Saturday, April 14th at 11 o'clock at the Reading City Hall, 777 Cypress Avenue. Who could deny science and technology? So I know a lot of folks are interested in this, so please make a note of that. We're visiting with Marjorie Strain, and Marjorie, you've given us a pretty good backdrop of your life in your earlier years. Could you tell us how you got into drugs?
Well, so someone who grows up like I did, you know, the thing that we long for the most, it's just for somebody to love us as much as we love them. So when I struck out on my own and was emancipated at 16, I embarked upon finding my own happiness, my friends, and people to call my own. And unfortunately, I fell in with a group of people that they welcomed me, and they also introduced me to narcotics, drinking, drugs. And so the easy...
So this was at age 15 was the first time...
16.
16, when you had any drug at 16,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Started off with alcohol, and it just escalated from there.
Uh-huh. Tell us of the progression.
Well, so I started off with drinking, and I just... You know, when you're on one substance, it becomes, you know, your sense of judgment is not so strong, and it's easy to become persuaded to try something different, mm-hmm. to drink longer. My friends told me that I could snort a line of meth and I could drink longer, and so I did that, and then when I couldn't sleep, they told me about pills that I could take that would help me sleep, mm-hmm. and marijuana I could smoke that would help me sleep, mm-hmm. and it just goes on from there.
So you eventually moved into heroin, correct?
Yeah. So when I was 24, the father of my son was shot and killed and died in my arms. And from that point on, I couldn't do meth because I would experience what they call daymares. So I could be like just sitting here talking with you, Henry, and then just black out to you and relive the scene. So I didn't do meth anymore, and I started taking opiates, pills, and once I developed a stomach habit for pills and couldn't get the pills anymore, heroin was the next step.
Mm-hmm. So you started drugs at age 16 and evolved into longer highs and so forth and so on. Where were you living? You were emancipated.
I was emancipated in Glynn County, uh-huh. which is where I was awarded the court. But I lived in Redding, mm-hmm. and that's where everything has transpired here in this county. I've been here 38 years.
So where were you living at those early years, those later 10 years?
Later yeah, 10 16, years, right here in Redding.
Did you have a home? Did you have a foster home? Or where did you live?
I worked and had my own apartment.
Uh-huh, I see. Okay. So you eventually moved up to heroin. And tell us about that whole experience of what heroin does maybe compared to the other forms of drugs and alcohol.
Well, for me, heroin is... It's not just a psychological addiction, it's a physiological addiction, which means it's got a hook on how I feel physically on top of the mental side of it. And so it became all-consuming for me. It consumed my days from the moment I woke up till the time I closed my eyes at night.
And how did you support this habit?
Any way that I could.
Really?
Yeah.
Just the normal hawking and stealing and...
Hawking and stealing. I stayed in unhealthy relationships with men that I didn't love. I prostituted myself with whomever could get me that next fix.
And this went on for how long?
For 20-something years.
That is an awful long time.
Yeah.
So having these occurrences take place here in Redding, I would imagine that you know a lot of the dynamic that currently goes on in Redding.
Oh, I see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever go talk to these folks?
Actually, that's one of my things to do. Like, I live right downtown. So I'm exposed to a lot of homelessness and people that have mental health issues and people that are active an active addiction to alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. So I do talk to them mm-hmm. lots.
Mm-hmm. Are you generally well received?
For the most part, but I do have occasions where sometimes, especially if they have a mental health
thing
going on top of the substance abuse, mm-hmm. Where they don't react too well with me.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure that you are successful in many cases.
Yeah.
Do you speak before groups?
Do I speak before groups like
talking about your situation?
Oh yeah,
and so guide and counsel others.
I'm asked to speak at a lot of different functions.
Uh-huh.
Probation asked me to speak at they have a stop meeting for probationers and parolees that are released every month. They have this meeting once a month, so I was a guest speaker there.
Mm-hmm.
The college has had me do several speaking events for them. I spoke to the Rotary Club here recently.
Mm-hmm.
And will pretty much make myself available to any type of speaking engagement where I can give my experience
story. Yeah,
away.
Your story. Absolutely. You know, you are very eloquent.
Hmm.
Is a matter of speech. I don't know whether you've been told that, but you are very eloquent.
So I think most of that stems from being an avid reader while incarcerated. So you get books and you read lots of books and you learn how to talk, you learn how to write. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's where my good language and stuff, my eloquency comes from.
You know, I had an inmate that I was chaplain to that from the local area, and it was about 32, 33 years old. That never learned to read. And we started lessons here in the county jail to teach reading, and we were stopped from doing that. But this inmate received a 25-to-life sentence. And I wonder how it would be incarcerated for your life, essentially, for your life, and not being able to read nor write.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be an enormous challenge?
It would be. But one thing that I do know and can say is that the California Department of Corrections, they don't let people stay uneducated. So, like, if you go there, they don't let you go into just any old job. You're tested right out the gate. Right. To determine what your education level is, and if it's not at a certain level and it's below, you're going to school.
We were stopped from teaching this student, this inmate here. We were not permitted to continue the reading, and we were making really good progress.
That's a shame.
It was very unfortunate.
Because I don't believe the county jail has any type of learning programs that are designed to help somebody that, you know, learning English as a second language, or even somebody that doesn't know how to read and write.
Right. It was very unfortunate. I really developed a very close relationship with this individual. The tendencies to better yourself or be smart or do better than others really starts at your very early age in life, where you had this propensity, this interest of wanting to learn. You know where you acquired that?
Well, I acquired it growing up in homes where the only way that I could get attention was to beat the other kids in school and, you know, bring home a better report card than them. So
isn't that an interesting manifestation?
Yeah.
That is very interesting.
Right.
So that's how that started and developed. Tell us, share with us how having that innate interest or desire or that compellingness to want to learn, tell us how that has propelled where you are today.
Well, so it wasn't innate to begin with. It was pretty much survival to get any kind of
attention,
accolade or attention as a young girl. And I had a learning disability, ADHD, so learning didn't come easily for me as a young girl.
So you had to work super extra hard.
Super extra hard to get where most other kids got a little bit easier. But it's driven me throughout my life to seek education over other things, like when I'd go to prison, I could, because I had I could read and write and could test above normal levels, I could get any job I wanted, so I could get a job with a pay slot, but instead of doing that, I would always go into their vocational programs or anything that I could learn more, and it's just continued from there. So when I got out of prison, you know, I can remember being a young girl and thinking about, you know, we have these, like, dreams, and we say, okay, I'm not going to smoke cigarettes, I'm not going to get pregnant before I get married, and all these different things, and I'm going to be an educated woman. And so, you know, I've broken most of those. Those are most of them are, I ended up doing the things that I said I wouldn't do. But on the education side of things, I have continued and pressed in and on as far as trying to become an educated woman. And
well, you come across as an educated woman.
I do, huh?
Yes, you do, most certainly.
Cool.
The president, past president of IBM, once said that the formula for success is to double your failure rate. What do you think about that?
Well, interesting enough that that's became true in my life.
I think probably true for most of us.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right. Some of us more than others. But, you know, I was asked once by a psychiatrist, you know, Margie, if you could change anything about your life, what would you? And, you know, I my answer would have to be that I wouldn't, because
you wouldn't change any aspect of your life.
I wouldn't change any aspect of it.
Because I'm
a pretty all right gal today. And that's only been because of where I've been. You know, my experiences haven't been all that good, but they've honed in me a lot of beauty.
Boy, it just shines right through.
Does it?
It really does.
I like that.
Just absolutely remarkable. What aspirations did you have in your younger ages? Were you able to think of aspirations for yourself when you became an adult?
Well, I certainly didn't dream of being a convict for 25 years.
Probably not.
So when I was young, I wanted to be a lawyer because I was good at talking. I talked a lot. And I was good at arguing, and so I thought I'd make a good lawyer. And I cared a lot about people, and whatever hurt them, then I would like be their advocate. So that's what I wanted to be. But of course, you know, I caught my first felony at 17, and that eliminated that dream. So I didn't have any specific aspirations. After that one was gone, it was pretty much just to be a better person and to serve others.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do that just by the way you talk. You speak with deep inspiration and knowledge. Tell us about your educational pursuits.
Okay, well, so after I got out on my last prison term in 2013, I decided I wanted to go back to college, because I had tried before, but of course, active addiction and college, they don't mix. You can't do both and come out with a good end. So I got into a program called Step Up through probation and through the college. And what
that
they
was
do,
through the local Shasta College, correct?
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. So what they do is support people who have been arrested before, not necessarily just prison, but any type of arrest qualifies you. Mm-hmm. And I enrolled in college, and I went into the industrial technology field of ag equipment operation and maintenance, which I just received my certificate in, which is a one-year certificate. And then I'm currently finishing my general education for my AS degree in industrial technologies, along with my transfer requirements to transfer to, I'm thinking either Chico State or UC Davis for my bachelor's in GIS, which is Geographical Information Systems.
Well, I want to have you tell us a little bit about what GIS means, but right now we're going to need to take another break. And this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5, a listener-supported radio. And our interview is Marjorie Strain, and we're going to be right back. So don't go very far. Welcome back, Henry Cuenca, with Marjorie Strain. And you're going to tell us what GIS is.
GIS is Geographical Information Systems, which is basically mapping for, like, Google Maps and stuff like that.
Oh, I see.
But it's the technology end of it. So you use equipment to do mapping. You use different programs. And you
enjoy it.
Yeah.
And to step up to a major university, college, UC Davis or Chico State, is a really big step.
Right.
You got to feel pretty good about that.
I feel excellent about that.
And when do you think you're going to be starting school there?
Well, I haven't applied to either one yet because I have to finish up my general ed for my AS in industrial technologies at Shasta, but I figure by spring of next year.
Terrific. You had mentioned something a little while ago that sounded like a really traumatic incident of having someone shot and fallen in your lap.
Yeah.
That's a pretty difficult ordeal. And if you don't mind sharing that with us, we'd like to hear about that.
So the father of my son and my only child was, he was shot in a drug-related incident, and he died in my arms when I was 2 months pregnant. So, yeah.
That was here in town?
Here in Shasta County in 1994.
And have you worked through that trauma?
Yeah, I went through a lot of counseling. I'm, you know, a PTSD sufferer for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, over the years, a lot of the symptoms of that have grown fewer and far in between.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that you never forget.
I would not think so. Ever.
Every time I look at my son, I see his father.
Tell us about your son. And your son is your only child?
He's my only child. I never intended on having children, and I ended up getting pregnant while on the pill.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you know, my son was the only thing left, of the legacy of the man who passed.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt compelled to bring him into the world and do my best to be a mother to him.
Can you share a little bit about your son?
He's 23 now, and He's a good boy. He's married, got one son. Mm-hmm. I have a grandson who's 3, and he's got one on the way, due in May. He's married. He's got a good relationship with his wife. My son does struggle with addiction, and he's doing well now, but in the not so recent past, he's, you know, had a small relapse, and all I can do is stay prayerful that
absolutely
God will grab a hold of him, and he'll find recovery like his mom. Mm-hmm.
What was the defining moment, the aha moment that you had, where you decided that you were going to change your life?
During this last prison term, I hadn't had any contact with my son since he was 10, because he was dealing with separation anxiety, and the guardian asked me not to have any contact with him. Mm-hmm. And so when he turned 18, my son found me while I was incarcerated. And he went.
How long had it been since you've seen him before he found you?
Wasn't supposed to have contact with him since he's 10, but I used to park out by the guardian's house and watch him play in her yard. So I had seen him over the years, but not had any physical or verbal contact with him since he was 10.
Mm-hmm. So then he set out to find you.
Yeah.
And he did find you.
Yes.
And how old was he when he found you?
18.
So that was 8 years lapse.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you saw him?
I didn't see him right away. I spent a lot of time talking to him on the phone because he found my husband at the time. And my husband got him in touch with me via telephone because I was in prison, so he couldn't get to me to see me. Mm-hmm. And then he picked me up with my ex-husband when I paroled from prison, mm-hmm. from my last prison term. And pretty much, you know, as for an aha and defining moment, the months before or after having DJ making contact with me, and I knew he would be at my then husband's home waiting for me where I was going to be paroling and living. At that, I think that was probably the most aha moment.
It was then connected with your son then.
Right.
Uh-huh. Are you close with your son now?
So-so. We're close, but he still has difficulty with a mom who chose a drug lifestyle over raising her son. Mm-hmm. So he has some anger issues. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, he and I are close.
Okay. What are you passionate about?
Probably the thing that I'd be most passionate, that I am the most passionate about, is being of service to others, in that I could give my experience, that bad thing that was of my past, and turn it into good by it being of use to someone else now.
That's a worthy ideal. A very worthy ideal. There's just no question about it. We have our share of homeless in our area, and what do you think when you see a homeless person just driving through town? We always see homeless people.
Well, as I was chronically homeless for over 20 years.
It's a long time.
Right. I remember my time and try to have compassion for people that, you know, it makes me sad to see them out in the rain with a bag, wearing a bag and a bag over their head to avoid, or staying on the porch of the lawyer's office that's next to my house. Those are those are moments that make me really have a lot of gratitude for where I am today.
Well, those are very touching experiences for anybody, and,
right.
they really should be. I was at the library a couple of weeks ago, some class, and it was really raining really very, very hard. And I was looking out the window, and there was a handful of homeless people. And there was one gentleman in particular that really was very, very sad. And he was in a wheelchair. And like you say, he had a cover over him. Wasn't underneath a tree or anything. He was just out in the middle. There was nothing above him but a little tarp. And the tarp wasn't covering his whole body. And I said, what a difficult situation.
Right.
And he just, I don't know whether he went to sleep for the night or what it was, but he was just silently just sitting there, pouring down rain.
It's hard to imagine what goes through a person's mind when they're out there, how they can't just be filled with so much despair that
There's no question.
Just want to give up.
Yeah, no question. Well, you know very well.
Right.
So, tell us about the most catastrophic events in your life that had the most significant impact on you.
So, of course, the homicide was B1. And then, catastrophic. I think that would have to be the only really, the most catastrophic event. But I've had a lot of other events that have had, more positive events that have been catastrophic.
Well, let's talk about the good ones then. Tell us of the achievements that you are truly so proud of having experienced or bestowed on you.
So recently, I graduated the AOP program. That's the Addicted Offender Program, which is the strictest, most rigorous drug court in the nation. And it's typically 2 to 5 years in this program, depending on, how you progress through it. But I recently graduated from this program and was awarded with certificates from the court, from the mayor's office, from city council, to Congress.
Tell us about that. Did you go down to Sacramento, the capital, to receive that achievement award?
No, actually, they came up here and awarded it.
So that was extra special.
Right.
And where was that awarded?
At the first floor in the county courthouse here in Shasta County.
And tell us what goes into giving that award to somebody.
Well, you mean what I had to do
No, what you had to do.
Well, so you start off with, you have to get in trouble with the law, and then they figure out a treatment plan for you depending on what your individual circumstances are. So I went into a residential treatment for 60 days, and then I went into a sober living environment, an SLE is what they call that, for another 4 months. And then I got a job and got a place and continued on with
outpatient. Life sounds pretty good.
Life is pretty good.
So that was it. That is a very high achievement, one certainly to be very, very proud of. Just
one that someone that's been to prison over 50 times would never imagine they could ever achieve.
Now, you bought your first car.
Right.
Tell us about that.
So I actually got to buy a vehicle off the lot recently. I got me a new Ford F-150.
Oh, I love it.
It's a 2011. It's not brand new, but it's new to me. And
it
has air conditioning for Redding hot summers. I've never had air conditioning, so I'm looking forward to this summer.
Absolutely.
And it's really, really nice.
What did you have to go through to, I'm sure that there were credit issues that you had to iron out.
Oh.
What is the process that you had to do to make your name good, to stand up for something like that?
I had to go back and clear all old debts that I had.
Uh-huh.
And make reparation where I could. And then just wait a period of time until those things fell off of my credit report. And that eventually happened. And, you know, between that and working, you know, when I'm in
the... Are you working full-time right now?
I'm not working full-time right now. I just recently had surgery on my foot.
Oh.
But I'm in the laborers union, and at the time I was working at the PG&E substation up in Burney.
Oh, yeah.
For a company and making really, really good money. When you're union, you get good benefits and
sure.
make a good hourly. So.
And you're also going to school right now.
Yeah.
And taking how many units?
I was taking 15, but I dropped one class, so now I'm taking 12.
12 minutes. Well, we're reaching the end of our show. And it's been truly an inspiration to have met you and to hear your story. And I know that our listeners are going through the very same thoughts. And, Marge, I'm going to ask you to say any concluding comments or statements that you would like to make to our audience.
Well, so thank you first for allowing me to be here and for having me. And I think the thing that I would want to end with is, for anybody that's got kind of a sordid past, I would say that it doesn't have to end there. That there's a whole world waiting for you on the other side of whatever it is that you've had to go through.
Marge Restrain, thank you very much for appearing on our show. You have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more about us. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and the world a better place. Please tune in to my next show, Tuesday, June 5th at 8 o'clock a.m. Pacific Standard Time, where you will hear another triumphant human story. Our featured guest, born and raised in Depression area oriented middle class Southern California, growing up mowing lawns, ironing tablecloths, babysitting, and going to church every Sunday, definitely a daddy's girl. Out of this never spoken crossword family, she learned the patterns of her life to be work, 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 and service to others. And remember today's quotation, the formula for success is to double your failure rate. Thank you very much for listening, and have a good day. You have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more about us. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and the world a better place.